Our awareness of pesticides is much greater than it was a few decades ago. I mean, baby boomers grew up with TV commercials about cartoon insects screaming in terror when the can of Raid showed up. Remember those? Boomers also grew up, though, with news about how pesticides like DDT were harming the environment and were eventually banned. The concerns gave rise to Integrated Pest Management, or IPM. As the name suggests, IPM pulls together a number of methods and approaches to keep crops from being eaten by creatures for whose consumption they were not intended. Pesticides are part of the approach, but not all of it. IPM is well known at the IPPC, which is the Integrated Plant Protection Center at Oregon State University, where Paul Jepson is the director. Dr. Jepson, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Great to be with you and talking to people in the great state of Jefferson.
Good to have you. The name of the center is broader than just pest management. Can we assume the work is broader than just pest management as well?
It is. I mean, we work globally, and pest diseases and weeds and various other organisms are incredibly damaging to human health, the environment, and to our crop production. So that is our major focus. But we are rather broader. We try and understand the way in which people learn and the way in which we can bring them the information that they need to make for themselves more rational decisions that help them kind of make progress in delivering more sustainable food and other outcomes, really. So we have a broad mission, but we pretty much focus on this kind of challenge that we face for centuries, and we still seem to be struggling with.
You mentioned that you're working globally, so people seek you out from all corners of the planet?
Yes, I mean, we're rather privileged. I mean, Oregon State is one of the leading universities for ecology in the world. It's considered to be in the top 9 or 10, and that's one of the reasons why a large number of people such as myself have been attracted to work here. And certainly our program has a global reach. There are things that Oregon farmers do and that we learn in Oregon and the Pacific Northwest that can be extended globally. And in very importantly, things that we can learn from the approaches people take in Central America, in Asia, in Africa, that we also bring back to Oregon. So this idea of a kind of a global community of people worrying about this problem is rather inspiring, and that's what we try and participate in.
What are the kinds of things that people will often contact you about? What's a fairly typical point of contention that somebody brings to your attention?
Something nasty eating their plants is one thing. And
right.
So, of course, you know, that's there's that sense of dread, and many people do. They see an insect in the home or the yard, or particularly homeowners and many of your listeners. With professional audiences, for example, I heard a statistic a few years ago that we get 25 new kind of pest crop associations in Oregon every year, around 25 completely new things. And we have to scramble, pull people together, understand what's going on, and that creates alarm. And then, obviously, pesticides are a concern. Our awareness of some of the challenges they pose are very much in the news nowadays. And there's a huge amount of exchange about bees and pollinators and general concern about what might be happening to those.
Given how fast some of those concerns, like the bees in particular, have sprung to the forefront, is
yes.
The job that you're doing today very different from the job you're doing 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, really great point. I mean, one good thing about my job is that I turn up each day and I have no idea what's going to happen.
Kind of like working
again,
in the news business.
Exactly. And so what's the news today? And so, you know, I'll be down in Jacksonville and Medford next week, actually, doing presentations and work with wine grape producers and with hay producers and people that spray the roadsides to minimize invasive species spread, and working with the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center. And there's an incredibly active group locally, as well as ourselves in the kind of nerve center at OSU, working to try and manage these problems. So, yes, you never know what's going to come up from one day to the next.
Paul Jepson, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the director of the Integrated Plant Protection Center at Oregon State University. We brought him on to talk about integrated pest management. Join our discussion at 800-838-3760 or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So how long has it sounds like the concept might have actually pre-existed the term integrated pest management.
Yes, and there's some debate on where this was really kind of described for the first time, but it seems as though farmers in South America, particularly Peru, had in the 1940s and 50s had some huge challenges with very rapidly expanding export industries for crops like cotton. And they worked out that reliance on pesticides that had arisen in the 10 to 15 years before that was absolutely not working for them. There were health incidents, mosquito-borne disease outbreaks, pest outbreaks because they'd killed all the natural enemies, the things that eat the pests. And so they worked out this method to minimize the chemical use or even try and eliminate it in some ways. And then there was a parallel process going on in California at the time, and it was the late 1950s when this idea was actually written down, because we'd really become, after the Second World War, a very chemically dependent nation. And that kind of almost recovery from that embracing new technology and this idea of a new world where chemistry was there to save us all, that kind of recovery is still ongoing, and it's taken us 60 years so far, and that striking the right balance is really where we are now. And as you say, this concept's evolving, the ideas are evolving, but some of the concerns are still there.
And it is a balance, though. We're not talking about excluding the use of pesticides,
no.
Just keeping them as one arrow in a quiver full of them.
That's right. It's the idea, you know, in some ways you could say we're saving pesticides to be like the last resort for many, many reasons, you know.
So let me get a sense, though, because it seems like as fast as things may be changing in the world around us, that integrated pest management itself has to be very nimble within a particular area of application because things are just changing that fast.
Agile is the word I'd like to use.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, we're constantly trying to keep up with the agility of farmers. I mean, people might think of farming as something rather kind of constant, but actually the farmers kind of are evolving and adapting what they do the whole time in response, and we're trying to support them in doing that and kind of almost like running to keep up, because this you know, it's rather overwhelming, the kind of onslaught that we face each year. New diseases, new types of diseases, and things that become resistant to pesticides, for example, and the climate is changing, and so we're facing epidemics that we've never really seen before, familiar things that happen in unfamiliar places. So that's the dynamic.
I was going to ask you about pesticide tolerance. It seems like even when you are using pesticides that after a while the bugs develop some resistance to them.
Yes, and we're running out of options for chemistry, and, you know, 20, 30 years from now, there will not be that imaginative resource of new chemicals that are toxic to plant diseases or insects. We're making the use of what we've got, stripping out the things that are too toxic to human health and the environment, and then managing the rest of them in a way that's probably going to take us through a further 20, 30 years of learning how to adapt our agriculture even better to minimize pest and disease risks. That's the kind of timescale we're talking about.
This looks a lot like what's going on in medicine, where they're developing, where superbugs are developing in response to the use of antibiotics.
It's exactly the same problem, Jeff, and it's no one would wish we are where we are now with antibiotics, but people felt that it was every little illness they had, and doctors were ready to prescribe, and the pigs looked healthier, and it was just a whole slew of uses of this kind of revolutionary kind of perceived cure not being used in a kind of precision way. And that's one of our human failings, really. We see things as a kind of magic solution, and they never really are.
We think once we've smacked something that it's going to stay smacked?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point, but I've got a fair number of years under my belt now working in pest management around the world, and, you know, you just can't eradicate things. It's incredibly difficult, or at least the types of organisms that pests are, let's not forget. They're the things that move most rapidly, they reproduce most rapidly, and the things that we want to preserve and protect and we're really worried about harming are the things that don't move around very much. They don't have high reproductive rates. They're very susceptible. So we can harm some organisms that take years or decades or never recover, whereas the pests just keep turning up. And that's another one of these balance arguments, that the things we're wanting to protect are often far more susceptible than the things we're wanting to kind of limit.
Dr. Paul Jepson, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's giving us a short course in integrated pest management from his office as the director of the Integrated Plant Protection Center at Oregon State University. Join our discussion here with your questions or comments, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's talk about some really basic practices then, Paul, if you give us some idea of some of the first things that you would use, the first arrows out of the quiver in IPM.
Well, for many farmers down there, there's a wonderful assembly of organic and sustainable producers who are incredibly careful in building the soil on their farms to provide the kind of perfect home for the plants. And then one of the things they're doing is selecting the right plant that's not going to be stressed, that's going to do well in that particular climate. And one thing IPPC does is now we've got a thing called Crop Time we've developed with other scientists at OSU and farmers, where you can work out when the likely harvest date is for many of the types of organic crops that occur in our farmers' markets. And so you time things well. And you buy what's called certified seed that's not going to have weed seeds in the seed mix or is not going to have diseases carried on the seed itself. So simple hygiene and being careful, and that applies to the orchardists in the Jefferson area and all the new wine grapes production that's going on there. Incredible care with site preparation and the plants you bring in. You've almost then pre-insured yourself. You've made the kind of environment far more resilient and able to tolerate small amounts of pest attack. And then, you know, just I'll mention one further thing before we move on. It's kind of monitoring. It's kind of understanding what you're seeing. You know, when that crop's looking a little bit snarky, is it because there was a frost 3 nights ago? Is it because it's not receiving sufficient nutrients? Is the irrigation, the water supply wrong? Or might it be a disease? And if you suspect it might be a disease, for goodness sake, go to your local county extension office and they will send a sample to OSU's plant clinic and you can find out. And so that's called diagnostics. And obviously, when we go to the doctor, we expect them to be a brilliant diagnostician. You know, what's wrong with my leg? It's the same with these crops. But so it's that kind of care. But we've got some amazing farmers in Oregon, those that have been here for a century or more, who just understand their system, and those that are bringing some rather fresh new approaches to agriculture that use this kind of soil building and environmental view of what a farm should be. And a lot of the answers are come from that kind of care and the ability to observe your farm and understand what's happening.
I remember talking to somebody a couple of years ago who pointed out that one of the issues is agriculture itself. If we didn't insist upon growing the same kind of thing in row after row after row,
yeah,
and had a natural environment where other things grew around it, those things would be natural,
yeah,
natural hazards to the insects that would eat the crops.
Yes. So, I mean, some of the places I go around the world, there's a practice called intercropping used. The carrots and the onions are grown in alternating rows, and the smell of the onion puts off the pest of the carrots that is attracted by the smell of the carrots, and so that's masked by the onion. So there's some amazing things you can do. We trade that off against the fact that some of the large-scale, less overtly intensive production we have, but still intensive production, has delivered to us a food supply that's pretty much kept up with global demand. And so, you know, we're not going to be able to dispense with large-scale agriculture, and finding ways of managing that and having those systems kind of improve, as it were, ecologically, to get natural enemies and some of these other defense mechanisms, as it were, built in. That's one of our challenges, because, you know, we can't break this extraordinary cycle that delivers food that's relatively inexpensive at the moment. And so it's striking that balance. Let's maximize the opportunity for these small, diverse farms interspersed with agriculture that can be just productive, but not pushing the boundaries, pushing the limits too far. And it's a kind of a coupled system. The ecology has to work along with what we need and with the wildlife and other things we want to support. And as you can imagine, it's just a huge shared enterprise, but one form of agriculture is not going to be the solution, just as one crop or one approach is not going to provide the solution.
In fact, when we talk about changing crops, which your discussion about the wine grapes in southern Oregon reminds me to ask about the fact that a lot of the vineyards are on what used to be pear orchards. Are the approaches going to be terribly different given the fact that there's a very different thing growing there now?
Yes, because the nature of the thing you're harvesting and the timing of that is different. I mean, those grapes, berries are on the plant available and very susceptible. They're little bags of sugary liquid, so they're extremely attractive to many pests, diseases, and weeds. So the nature of the things that attack is different. I mean, broadly, the principles are the same. But one of my two colleagues, Joe DeFrancisco and Katie Murray, actually a couple of weeks ago, worked with wine grape producers from all over Oregon, from the northeast right the way down to the southwest where you are, to come up with what's called a pest management strategic plan. And we had in Portland a room full of people kind of arguing about different approaches that could be used to improve the resilience, as it were, of wine grape production, and also make it more sustainable, but also retain the profit. And so that's something we're actively doing, and we're busy almost like inventing collaboratively with those producers a program that's going to work. And when you have a new industry like this, it's kind of there waiting, as it were, like a salad bar for things to kind of invade and kind of check it out. And so that's what we're seeing. And but that's a process that's ongoing. And Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center, Rick Hilton, who's there, who many people may know in your area.
Entomologist?
Fantastic guy. And so that's he's working just full-time, literally full-time, to try and bring solutions that meet the growers' needs, but also absolutely respect what the expectations of the public are and what some of these environmental and health concerns might be.
We'll take a couple more minutes here talking with Dr. Paul Jepson, Director of the Integrated Plant Protection Center, IPPC, at Oregon State University. We're talking about IPM, or Integrated Pest Management. Join us on the exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. This is a real two-way street, it sounds like. It's not just the IPPC saying, do this. It's the IPPC saying, what do you got? What's happened there? Let's hear it.
Yeah.
Let's move on there.
Yes, and we use a method that's called participatory education because it's honestly the only thing that works. We develop methods. I've got a colleague, Mary Halbleib, who I work with here, who's an expert in, if you like, the way people learn. And so working collaboratively, finding out what the needs are from a farmer, but also having farmers and other pesticide users and IPM users, as it were, being able to realistically employ new ideas that they come up with and we come up with in some setting that they're comfortable with and allows them then to adapt these methods when they leave the classroom. You know, public health, for example, this messaging and just saying don't do this, don't do that, the uptake of general health and safety information is rather depressingly poor. Things get a lot better when you actually involve people in understanding the challenges they face, and they can come up with solutions that they can then kind of accommodate and apply in their lives. And it's just the same in agriculture. And but I can tell you the farmers we work with of all types are actually not at all interested in us saying what they should do. What they're interested in is working collaboratively with us on the kind of science that can give them the confidence to take a step forward in doing something new.
How closely related, Paul, are organic and IPM? If you're using IPM for your pest management, does that automatically lead to organic designation?
No, it doesn't, because organic has some special features to do with it, to do with the origin of all of the different inputs that are applied. None of them can be of synthetic origin, and that's very strictly policed and monitored. And so there's, if you like, an extreme, you could say, of organic production to me would look rather similar to rather intensive, what we might call conventional production that does use synthetic pesticides. When you get to the kind of smaller, very diverse farms where there's a lot of local expertise, you have to use something like IPM if you're someone that's decided that you don't want to rely on organic chemical inputs, because there are many organic pesticides, don't forget. And so some of those individuals who are growing a diverse array of crops have somehow do master IPM in a way that seems to come naturally because they've almost like got no other option in a sense. And so there's a lot we can learn from that. But by the same token, most of the ideas for IPM that are pursued in the organic industry have come from the agriculture that evolved in the centuries before the kind of organic became mainstream. And so we've got much more of a sharing of ideas between organic convention and conventional production than most people might think. And when you get, there's many producers in our state who are have an organic part of their farm and a part of their farm that is not organic. And also when you get groups of producers together, they just get on like a house on fire, sharing methods, talking with each other, getting excited. And although, yes, there are kind of movements that lie behind and advocacy groups that lie behind different forms of agriculture, and they can polarize us, when you get farmers together, their common interests and drive things ahead. And what you see is the similarities rather than the differences, Jeff.
Just as IPM doesn't rule out pesticides, does it work with genetic modifications as well? I mean, are GM crops part of the process potentially in IPM?
Interesting point. I mean, many of the early GM crops were designed to be tolerant to insects. And so, for example, in Arizona, they've gone from, I think, an average of 19 or 20 sprays in cotton a year down to 2 or 3 sprays in cotton a year because they successfully adopted a crop that had a bacterial toxin engineered into it that killed the major moth pest. And so in terms of profitability and reducing risk and eliminating pesticides, that was one of the greatest things ever. But genetic modification is a form of plant breeding, and in general, plant breeding is a thing that has a huge impact on IPM, because if you choose a plant that happens to be really susceptible to a locally abundant pest or disease, you know, you're almost locking in the need to use a pesticide, whereas if you choose something that's not susceptible at all to that pest or disease, then, you know, the insect just simply doesn't arise, or the disease is not there. And so when genetic modification can work with agriculture a little bit more in a sense and address specific local needs, it can have a knock-on effect that results in less pesticide use. But then it's not the same thing. It's just, you could think about it as just another form of plant breeding. And I know it attracts that huge controversy around it, but from the principal perspective, that's what it's doing.
Well, as you pointed out, never a dull moment. You never quite know what each day is going to bring.
So, no, that's right.
Lots of great stuff going on at the Integrated Plant Protection Center at Oregon State University, where Dr. Paul Jepson's the executive director. We hope to have you back sometime and get Chapter 2 of our IPM study course.
I'd love to, Jeff, and thank you very much to everybody for listening.
All right, take care.